Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Seton, what if I told you there's a bacon, then there's number one thick cut, tastes like a touchdown in your mouth bacon?
You must be talking about Wright brand bacon, because they are not playing when it comes to the premium quality of their bacon.
It's thick cut, hand trimmed, and real wood smoke, real. And you can tell.
So why settle for average bacon when you can have the real stuff?
That's right. And if you're looking to upgrade any meal, try Wright brand bacon. That's called Wright brand bacon. You won't regret it.
Experience bacon the right way.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my sports in one app, like the National Women's Soccer League, included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Remember when I would talk to Turtle and I would Jerry Ferrara, and I'd always talk about it, and I'd say, hey, how's Emmanuel Shrieky?
Sometimes you'd lead the interview with him.
I would. I'd say, hey, Turtle, how's Emmanuel Shrieky? Good. She'd have no interest in you. And I go, that doesn't matter. I have interest in her. Who doesn't?
Spectacular.
She is. In person, she was wonderful. And she was in Zohan with Sandler. Sneaky, great role by Sloane, who was in Entourage. Yes, McLeod.
And you turned that movie down, as I recall, right?
Yes, I did, because that's where I was asked if I could do a Middle East accent as a cab driver. And I said, no, I don't think I'm... I mean, I'm a well-versed, well-traveled actor. But, that was something that was probably out of my milieu. I think the timeline conflicted with other acting roles that I had there. And I do regret that, because I remember asking Sandler, I said, you didn't tell me Emmanuel Shrieky was in the movie. He goes, you didn't ask, Danny. Yes, Fritzy.
So I see what you're doing here, because this is a great segue as far as talking about some of the beautiful people out there in the world. So I'll let you take it from there, because I'm very comfortable saying that.
What? Brady Quinn?
Sure.
Emmanuel Shrieky to Brady Quinn?
I'm talking about beautiful people in general.
Oh,
and, we always get bummed when he has to join us on the phone as opposed to on the Zoom. Here he is. We get the visual aspect.
How awkward is this, Brady?
I feel like it got really hot in here all of a sudden. You mentioned Emmanuel Shrieky. I'm starting to sweat. It's taking me back to the days of Entourage.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to feel right now. Let me ask you this question, Dan.
Yeah.
So when I say the name Sloane.
Yeah.
Which does that take you back to? Who do you first think of? Is it a...
Can we hold on? We got something that's happening technically there. It got too hot. I think it's burning up the lines, phone lines here with Brady. Hold on, Brady. Yes, Paulie.
What he's referencing there is a classic argument, Sloane from Entourage, or Sloane Peterson from Ferris Bueller.
Oh.
Played by the great Mia Sara. Don't go deep with me on that movie. She was a stunner.
I like Sloane, but she's not Sloane from Entourage. Yeah. But that's a very good poll question right there. I haven't seen much of Sloane Peterson from Ferris Bueller Day Off. Yeah, Seton.
That is, Sloane Peterson. She might be the 80s Emmanuel Shrieky.
Ooh.
Great point.
Ooh. All right.
Or is Emmanuel Shrieky the 90s or 2000s?
Todd, are we good to go?
Yeah, I think there was an AirPods issue that was causing that hissing sound.
Oh, okay. Let's bring back Brady Quinn. Let me give you the full introduction here. Fox College and NFL studio game analyst, and you can hear him. Two Pros and a Cup of Joe alongside LeVar Arrington, Jonas Knox. And that's the show that precedes ours on Fox Sports Radio, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. Where were we, Brady?
So the reason why I ask you the question of who you think of is because our eldest daughter's name is Sloane. And usually that puts you in one of two categories. Mm. You're either a Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and that's your first recollection of the name Sloan, or you're an Entourage. And so there's like a cutoff of like the older folks who remember Ferris Bueller's Day Off as the Sloan, or Entourage, which is like kind of the more cooler hip version. But you said Emmanuel Shariki, so you get points for being more the cooler hip version and relating it back to Entourage.
All right. That's all we needed to talk to you about, Brady. We appreciate your time.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Hey, did you see where they changed the rule, the Kenny Pickett rule, where now it's if you give any kind of indication, you're going to – like college football changed something immediately, and nothing changes in college football. What did you think of the play, and what do you think of now them revising the rule?
Well, I understand the revision for it because it's a player safety issue. And I think they're looking at it saying as soon as you begin to go down, that's where they're actually spotting the ball. So ultimately, it makes it a harder play, not only on the defender, but on the officials. Whereas they're almost basically saying you start to give yourself up, play is dead. Like, we're giving you that protection as a runner. But if you're being honest with me about it, I thought it was the dopest move we saw maybe in college football season. Like, if there was like a Heisman moment, it might be that for Kenny Pickett, even though he was phenomenal this year. Like, that singular play that ended up in a touchdown now literally got you to change the rule. Like, I don't, he's not going to end up winning it. Bryce Young will, but my man, Kenny Pickett, hashtag two gloves. Like, that was one of the coolest things. And it led to a changing of a rule, much like in our show with LeVar Arrington. He was jumping over, you know, line of scrimmages to block kicks. Like, he kind of pushed for that change of ruling for player safety as well. So I give him a lot of credit for pulling it off.
What do you think of Pickett?
I think he's the best quarterback in this year's draft class. I think when you look at the strides he's made every single year at Pitt, when you start breaking down the film, one of the biggest things you notice is his game's going to translate to the NFL level. Almost similar to the model in which, like, I've compared him in the past. He reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger coming out of Miami, Ohio. He's not quite as big as Ben was. But when you go back and watch some of that tape, you know, he can play from the pocket. He's got a strong arm. He'll take those shots downfield. He has no problem, you know, with the 20-plus yard throws. But he also can create, and he doesn't give up on plays. And he's got a little bit of that to him. And he's got that kind of it factor. Like, I don't know what it is. I can never understand or describe it. But when you watch him play and you see him, there's like a toughness about him. He has it. So if I was a team looking for a quarterback in this year's draft, that would be at the top of my list.
Okay. Could he go number one overall? If you're the Lions or the Texans, could you see Kenny Pickett going number one?
I could, yeah. If they're the ones that ultimately feel like he needs to be the guy right away. I mean, the one thing playing to him is he's played a lot of college football. And so I think if you draft him there and you make him the guy day one, he's experienced, I think, with what he's been asked to do by Pat Narduzzi and their staff, it should translate well. Now, the question really becomes, what does he have out around him? And that's depending on the team you're looking at, if it's Detroit or Houston, not that much. He had a Blitnikoff finalist and Jordan Addison on his team this year. He's had some talent at the wide receiver position on Pitt throughout. So that'll be the biggest challenge. But he's got the mobility and he's got that sort of toughness. Well, I think he'll be fine making his way through a lot of the adversity early on. It just comes down to whether or not they surround him with enough talent out around him.
Chip Kelly has been given permission by UCLA to talk to Oregon.
Are you going to let Phil Knight just sweep in and scoop him off and take him away? I mean, there's less recruiting restrictions there. He's going to get paid more money. That is a cupboard that is not bare. I know Chip Kelly's done a good job at UCLA getting it to this point, but Mario Cristobal is leaving a team that should be able to compete talent-wise in the Pac-12 the next couple of years. So if you want to give the keys back over to Chip Kelly, I mean, I think it's gonna keep them up atop, at least in the Pac-12 and in one of the top 20 teams in college football.
But can UCLA afford to keep him? Or can UCLA afford to not keep him?
Yeah, that's the tough question. I mean, I don't know any big money donors out there, do you? I mean, maybe we should call them up and ask them if they're willing to stroke that check to keep them. Because I know Phil Knight obviously tried to keep Mario Cristobal, and he maybe, and I don't know how things ended there at Oregon with Chip. It probably didn't necessarily end in a bad way if you're going to go take an NFL job and that's how you're leaving. So I'm sure they'd open the door and have that same 90 $100 million 10-year deal waiting for him. That's hard to turn down. So unless UCLA is willing to ante up with that, and I don't imagine they are, I would say it would make a lot of sense that Chip found his way back to Eugene.
If you ran the Steelers, what would you do? First order of business next season?
Well, I mean, they've been trying to subtly or softly find the replacement to Big Ben, but at the same time, give him enough respect for what he's accomplished, a Hall of Fame career, you know, throughout his time with the Steelers. So now that's the position you go draft and you go figure out how to replace. I said this earlier this season when I was watching some Kenny Pickett film, we started talking about some of that Heisman buzz he was starting to build. I said, this is who he reminds me of. He happens to be playing football at Pitt. They share the same facility. I don't know many people know this. The University of Pitt and the Pittsburgh Steelers share the same indoor. They share the same training facility. Like, just keep the guy at home. Like, if you're Pittsburgh, if you're the Steelers, do whatever you can to go get that guy. Because I think he walks right into that organization as familiar as he is with everything. And he helps get them kind of back up to where they need to be. Because it's not a roster that's devoid of talent. It's just one where I think they just need to find that next guy to bring some of the mobility that Ben used to display early on in his career there. If you'll remember, like, the big plays down the field to Hines Ward and Mike Wallace and Emmanuel Sanders, like all those, you know, all those big plays, Antonio Holmes back in the day, it was all his like mobility and the job he did shaking guys off, making moves to make big plays. You don't really see that from him anymore. And you get it at this age in his career.
Is Kirk Cousins a good quarterback?
I would say he's better than good. I think you can make the case he's great at times. He probably doesn't get enough credit for how consistent he is. The question of if he's ever going to win a Super Bowl or help a team elevate to that status, it's probably one where, and there's a lot of quarterbacks that fall into this category, he probably needs more out around him than other guys, right? I mean, you saw Dalvin Cook last night. He really stole the show.
Why did they stop running? Why did you all of a sudden let Kirk Cousins throw the ball? They didn't need to.
They didn't need to, but it could be a schematic thing too, right? Where do you want Dalvin Cook, who just came back from injury, to be banging his head against a loaded box? I mean, you do have Justin Jefferson, who's one of the best wide receivers, maybe the best right now.
Yeah, but you got Madison. Playing. Madison can run the ball. You didn't have to have Dev. I just thought, you know, what are you doing? And then he threw two interceptions. Next thing you know, Pittsburgh's back in the game.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, the one that was the KJ Osborne, they're trying to run a rub route. Akella Witherspoon, you know, Osborne stumbles. Akella Witherspoon cuts in front of it. There's always these, like, look, before the play, do you think they were saying to themselves, well, let's not throw it because we know Kirk's going to throw an interception here? It's like, yeah. Look, crap happens. It did on that play, and it resulted in, you know, again, giving Pittsburgh some momentum. But, you know, I hearken back to, it's not like they're trying to go into that game and say, hey, let's blow the doors off of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then let's let them creep back into it for TV ratings or to make it more suspenseful. Because, I don't know, we've played 10 games this year where the game's been decided in the final play, so let's just make it another one. You know, let's make it our 9th or 10th game, whatever it's been.
Okay, but there's a pattern here, though, Brady, with this Vikings team. That's why they're an average team, because they don't put you away. They don't, you know, they allow you to, they're in the game and you're in the game. And that's a recipe for disaster in a, you know, an 8-9 season, maybe a 9-8 season.
No, and that's where it looks like it's heading right now. But I don't even know if that's necessarily a product of just the coaching. I mean, you don't think Mike Zimmer, being as defensive minded as he is, wants to run the football more than anyone?
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of conversations being had right now this morning about it, because as much as you're happy about a win, usually that's when coaches are most critical of players and most critical of their staff, because you can still feel good after the win. Whereas after losses, you kind of need built back up. Like, this is an instance where there's going to be a lot of questions being asked of the offensive staff as to why you got away from the run game when there was these gaping holes the entire first half that Dalvin Cook was running to. Like, where did that go in the second half? So there's got to be an explanation. My bet would be the Pittsburgh Steelers were selling out at that point to stop the run. They wanted to take those one-on-one opportunities when they had them.
We're talking to Brady Quinn, Fox Sports College and NFL studio and game analyst. Mike McCarthy guaranteed the win against Washington. I don't know what that means. Like, if you say, look, I'll quit if we don't win, like, if you guarantee, what are you guaranteeing? If it doesn't happen, then what? Like, I don't even know what that means, but now it's bulletin board material for, like, Washington wasn't going to play hard, like, you know, in division against Dallas. He guaranteed a victory. How would you feel if you're Dak Prescott and coach says, I guarantee a win?
Well, you better have his back. I mean, the whole quote, when you listen to it, the interesting thing was he said it, and then the reporters followed up with him about it. Then he kind of was like, well, you know, I expect to win every game. Let me just back right out of this. Like, he almost was like, oh, I said that? Oh, my bad. I didn't mean to say it. I mean, we expect to win every game, so what's different about this one?
I would respect him more if he just said, hell yes, I guaranteed it.
Well, I think people feel more comfortable, you know, saying these quotes and making these proclamations because, you know, who actually has a bulletin board anymore, Dan? I mean, who's literally taking the clipping from the paper and going, let's just put it up here on the bulletin board so everyone walks by and sees it. Oh, no, someone ran by and got knocked down. We got to put it back up with the tack on the bulletin board. I mean, I'm trying to think of any organization I was ever part of where we actually had a bulletin board material. Like, we actually had it placed somewhere. I mean, it might go up in a team meeting over the, you know, I guess it's an iPad now, the computer system, right? They might put it up. But it's not like you're going to be reminded of it throughout the course of the week on some bulletin board in the locker room.
Wait, I mean, did you ever have bulletin board material? Like your coach said, this is what they're saying.
I did in college. I will never forget this. I did in college, but it wasn't through our team. It was something that actually my mom sent me. So we played Boston College, and it must have been my freshman year. And we ended up losing. I think I threw maybe a couple picks in that game, whatever it was. And there had a linebacker there named James Ott. I think that was his name. He actually was like good friends and teammates with Brian Flores, the head coach of the Dolphins. And I remember my mom sent me a clip where he said something about, well, he's not that special or he's not that good in relation to me. And I did have a bulletin board material in 2003. So I remember I put it up in my dorm room and I kept it throughout my entire college career. And I never forgot that. So I don't know where the heck James Ott is. I'm pretty sure that was his name, but I never forgot. I never let that go.
Paulie, bring in James Ott.
Here
James,
he comes.
James, thanks for joining us. Brady is calling you out here. Well, did you play better the next time you played against Boston College since you lost the game your freshman year?
Yeah, I think I played better, but I think we still lost. Yeah, we ended up losing that next. We were up, and I think we ended up losing by like a last-second field goal or a last-minute field
goal. Were you the Kirk Cousins of Notre Dame football back then?
Gosh, probably those first couple years, maybe. I don't know. The last couple ended up being all right. Like, I don't think that was the issue the last couple. You know? Like, Bryce Young just won the Maxwell. I won the Maxwell. Yeah, I won a couple Player of the Year awards. Like, I don't think that was the issue back then, at least.
How important is this game for the Browns against the Ravens?
You know, you could have said last night was the season for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I get the sense like that's what this game is in taking on the Ravens. Not only just for, I think, their hopes in the division, but just with all of the hype coming into this season about the Browns. I mean, let's not forget, we were talking about them like a potential like outsider of making it a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, and they got past the hump of beating Pittsburgh in the playoffs. They did it in dominant fashion. And so this is like that other team that I think, look, dating back to when I was there, the Baltimore Ravens, it was always one of the toughest teams to get by. You know, just their defensive scheme, the culture, their everything. And they've struggled against them. So I think if they lose this one, you'd have to start thinking that there's going to be a lot of questions about the future at the quarterback spot, how they feel about Baker, are they going to commit to him or not, and what really ended up happening this season, why they took a step back from what they were a year ago.
So it's always great to talk to you. Thanks again, and hopefully we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Brady.
Sounds good, guys. Great day.
That's Brady Quinn, Fox Sports College and NFL studio and game analyst. Two pros and a cup of joe. Alongside LeVar Arrington and Jonas Knox, you can hear that radio program that precedes ours Monday through Friday on Fox Sports Radio. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like Digging for Treasure or a Robot Pachinko Machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. Like, a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. All in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
It is getting that time of the year. It's Miller time. You don't need a watch or a clock to tell you. It's Miller time. Weather gets a little bit warmer. All of a sudden, the beer gets a little colder.
It's beer cracking season.
Okay. I don't know if it says that on the calendar. It's a beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters the most. It's a light beer that tastes like beer. That's why I reach for a Miller Lite. And it's less filling, only 96 calories. They've been doing this since 1975. They have perfected it. You know, that summer afternoon, we're coming into that time of the year, be like, oh, man.
Crack one?
Yes, or two. Don't look at your watch. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at the calendar. You know. Miller Lite, the great taste, less filling, tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Patrick, or you can pretty much find it anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories, fewer carbs than premium regular beer. Miller Lite.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Ray Allen, the Hall of Famer, two-time NBA champ. And we wanted to have Ray on so I could still call him the greatest three-point shooter of all time. And then that'll probably change in a couple of days here. But Ray Allen, kind enough to join us. Huh?
It doesn't have to change.
It doesn't?
Still call me that.
I can still call you the greatest three-point shooter of all time?
Yeah.
Are you the greatest three-point shooter of all time?
Well, that's certainly subjective, depending on who you're talking to. And I think that's something that it's interesting when we talk about that in sports, when we talk about who we think the greatest of all times is, when you're talking about, you know, whatever, quarterbacks to, you know, best basketball players. I think it's important to understand, like, because we all have a different perspective. You know, if you live in a great football city or basketball city, you've seen great basketball and what it means to you. And the game has certainly changed over the years. So as I've always tried to push who I think the greatest of all times is in any particular sport, I started to think about it and I was like, but that's to me, you know, it's my opinion. And, you know, kids today, they see what they see based on, you know, social media, and they can't imagine somebody being better than the current players that are playing today.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at volume, and really, I don't even know how to quantify this record, because it's not like Barry Bonds' home run record or Kareem's all-time scoring list. This is Steph Curry at the right time in the right place gets an opportunity to take 8 to 10 to 12 three-pointers. When you first started out, you were shooting less than 4 three-pointers a game. If you were starting out now, you're probably shooting 8 to 10 to 12 three-pointers a game, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, most definitely. When I first got into the league, to shoot a three-pointer was like, you know, it was like forbidden. Like, the coach got mad at you. He'd take you out of the game. He wanted you to swing the ball, throw it into the post. And so, you know, it started to evolve. So I've been seeing all these posts about, you know, how many games I played and with my record and compared to Steph. And I thought to myself, I was like, what actually does that mean? Because everybody's like, oh, he did it this many more games. And to your point, we shouldn't be comparing, because it has nothing to do. It doesn't say that he's a better shooter than me, or I'm a better shooter than him, or we're better than Reggie. It just is a number based on the time frame that we've played in and how we've had an effect on the game while we played. Yeah, because I would never say that I was better than Reggie, because Reggie basically, he grew a lot of us young shooters up, and we idolized what he did, and we kind of built into our practice, into our routines, into how we play the game off of, you know, the example that he set. And so to try to compare myself to him is like, you know, he's part of me. And that's kind of, I think, as we start to move on, each generation sees what the previous one did, and they build off of what they did. And that's what makes the game great and the players great, because of who's come before them.
Ever lose confidence in your shot?
I think I've lost confidence in my shot. I know I always was going to be able to shoot the next shot, but the thing that's most difficult is when you go into a slump, it seems like you're the only one that's trying to help you get out of that slump, because, you know, the escalator moves on, because every coach is like, well, he's not shooting the ball well, so we'll sit him down and put somebody else in. And so I'm like, well, coach, I need more touches. So it's certain for shooters, you have to be able to find a way to get to the free throw line, to get the easy layups, to do the things that don't put pressure on your long ball.
Who taught you how to shoot?
Well, my dad was a great shooter. He shot right-handed and left-handed. I always give credit to Jeff Lynch at the base that I grew up in, and Edwards Air Force Base. I'm Phil Pleasant, because they gave me the fundamentals. You know, I still have the video of when I was shooting free throws, and it looked very terrible. And then as I got older, I had, Coach Hobbs, who's now at Rutgers. They had a big win last night. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah,
shot.
I did. And Ron Harper's son hit the game winner.
Ron Harper Jr. So congratulations to Rutgers on that game winner. But Coach Hobbs was a guards coach at UConn my freshman year. Now it's his first year at UConn. And he gave me these tools to work on that I needed to get better at shooting and being a guard in college. So it seems like there's not one person, but there's a collection of people over the years. And I don't think any year that I played, I thought I was good, but I was always getting pushed by somebody from one year to the next. And something was being added to my training, to workouts. And, you know, I was just I soaked it up every year.
But you start to look at around the NBA, and there are guys who just can't shoot.
Yeah.
How do you react to that when you see a guy who can't even make, you know, 50% of his free throws?
Well, I've come to find out that free throws, it's just focus. And I think we don't understand how emotional they are. And if you don't take that emotion that you have in games, think about it. You either just got knocked down, you hard foul, the score of the game, you're either down two and you got to make these two, or, you know, you're up two and you got to ice the game. There's different scenarios that force you to think about the free throw. And if you don't practice that during practice, then you're not preparing yourself for the game. And then further, when you think about some of the guys shooting threes, how many guys take a three when they don't need to, and they can just kind of take that 1-2 dribble and get the mid-range jump shot. And that takes the pressure off the three ball, a time when you didn't need it. And you figure if you took 9 threes in a game and you're like 2 for 9, if you only took 6 and you're 2 for 6, you know, you get those other little mid-range shots going, then you might even be 4 for 6, because now you got yourself a little confidence going.
Would you be in favor of moving the three-point line back?
No, I don't think moving it back.
What if you eliminated the three-point shot?
It would definitely make the game more methodical, I think, because then you'd have to move around.
Better? But would it make it better?
I don't think so. I think it'd be more helter-skelter, because the three-point line is – it gives us a sense of spacing. It's a threat. It gives us, you know, for the defense. But I think the best way to use a three-pointer is that, is just to threaten your opponent. You can shoot it, and then you set it up with your great shooters, and you're able to get into the paint and do other things.
Yeah, but there's no movement in basketball. There's a lot of stand around because of the three-point shot. And you got guys who are shooting threes who shouldn't be shooting threes, Ray. It's your fault.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I don't blame myself at all, by the way. I like to think that I put some good stuff out there and set a good tone, but I think what it boils down to is a lot of the coaches, when you think about what they accept and what they allow. Because I've, as you know, in the last 6-7 years, I'd be watching games, even in the high school level. I don't see it as much in college, but you see kids shooting between half court and the three-point line, and then the coaches don't say anything. Like, I get it. The three is worth more than the two. But at some point, a coach has to reel in certain guys and say, you know, percentage-wise, you know, until you get, you know, work on this shot and you get better attempts and you're more efficient, I don't want you shooting threes. I want you to get to the basket. You know, we've lost a little bit of the mid-range game and the post game for sure.
Well, what would happen if Shaq was playing now? If Shaq came into the league right now?
The league, it would have to change again, because Shaq was just too dominant. I believe that the way to go back, because what we're a copycat league. So when Golden State started winning championships, what happened was everybody had to adjust to how they played if they wanted to try to beat them. So they sped up their games. A lot of people started finding shoot threes and three shooters and trying to get them to shoot the ball. A lot of bigs lost their jobs. You know, they moved to the benches. Philly had a kid from Duke.
Elton Brand?
No. A little bit younger, big guy. He came into the league as they started shooting threes, and then he actually had no place. I can't think of his name right now. But until Philly wins the NBA championship, you know, that's when I think it's going to revert back to, you know, a big, because you got Embiid down there. That team right now saying we don't really have to deal with him, because they're not dominating the Eastern Conference and the NBA to where we need a defensive big and a big that can score on him down low. Right now, we don't have that. And so until they do that and they change it, the game is going to be where it is.
We're talking to Ray Allen, the two-time NBA champ, the all-time leader in three-pointers made. Have you been asked to go to the game in Philadelphia or in Indiana the next two games for Steph?
Yeah, I spoke with the people with the Warriors, and I actually spoke with Steph a little bit, trying to kind of help him navigate this whole process. It's an exciting time for him, and I try to give him the kind of what I was dealing with, and you know, going into the game and everything that led up to it. And, you know, I was fortunate because it was I broke the record in Boston against the Lakers with Reggie in the building. So it's just only appropriate that I find my way there by hook or by crook. I don't know where it's going to be. So I got to kind of watch this thing. I don't know if you noticed, but I'm coaching myself, Gulliver Prep here in Miami.
Yeah.
And so we have games as well. So it's kind of like a tricky situation for me trying to navigate kind of what it is that happens with them. But
why don't you go and heckle him, Ray? Why don't you like put up a sign or yell out, "I'm the king"?
Because if you haven't watched anything over the last 12 years, that's not going to bother Steph.
I know. Who do you think would be a better three-point shooter, knowing who they are, if they started out now, Kobe or Michael?
Well, I think they both were underrated three-point shooters. When you think about they're just – it's like if you could do one thing great and a couple things great, then some of the other things get overshadowed. Mike just never really had to shoot threes because he was so good inside the paint. Kobe was so good just scoring in general. So if I had to say between both of them, it's hard because they both play with their back to the basket. They both were slashers at the rim. I just don't think that their games were designed to just sit out there and wait and sit behind a three-point line.
But better form, better shooting form, Jordan or Kobe?
Better form, Jordan for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
See, this may sound strange to you. I think Klay Thompson is a better stand shooter than Steph is. It's like Steph just creates. Klay, get the ball, maybe one dribble or catch and shoot is more dangerous than Steph. Is that a fair assessment in your opinion?
Well, I wouldn't say more dangerous because Steph has the ball all the time. So you have to really take that offense or that defense and you have to contribute two and then sometimes three guys to him. And then that's where everybody around him is able to be great in their roles. But in my comparison with Klay is moving without the ball. He can shift the defense when he gets open, everybody gets open, similar to how I played. I believe that Steph is in a lane of his own that I don't think he has. You can say, he and Damian Lillard with their ability to shoot from deep and be able to handle the ball and get to the paint. But Steph gets to the paint more than Lillard does. But I would compare Klay more to myself and Reggie because we are moving without the ball. We're kind of on the weak side a lot. And throw Rip Hamilton in there, even though Rip wasn't he wasn't a big volume three-point shooter, but to be able to move the defense and to come off pin downs and screens and shooting transition without touching the ball, that's a real, real talent.
Is LeBron a good shooter?
I say he's a good shooter, but he's also a field shooter. The more he has the ball in his hands, he can make shots. He's a shot maker.
Yeah, I don't like the form, and I don't like that he's taken all these threes, but I think that might come as you get older, that you just don't want to drive to the hoop and take the beating.
Yeah, and you feel it. When you get older, you feel, you don't have there's a sponginess, for lack of a better term, that your body, your calves, your ankles, you feel that sponginess when you're younger. When you get older, that goes away a little bit. And so you can work on jumping just that much and perfect your shooting from outside. Like when I had one of my best shooting nights when I had patella tendonitis when I was playing in Milwaukee, and I just managed how to come off a screen and shoot just by jumping a little bit and pushing the rest away with my hands. And so LeBron, with his size, he has so much upper body strength, though. He's going to be able to maintain shooting and shooting well, but he has to have the ball in his hands to keep that rhythm.
Did you ever airball a three-pointer?
I'm not going to say no, because I'm sure somebody could find someone somewhere. But I always get on my kids because I said, varsity players, you guys should not be shooting airballs nowhere. Get the ball, let it hit the rim, but – just like anything, never up, never in. So shooting the air balls, like, you didn't even have a shot of it going in.
But see, you got to show your kids. And I do think this is great because people now, they find you again and then we talk about you. So I think even though you're going to lose this record, it's also great to shine the spotlight on you one more time, or at least one more time with, your greatness at shooting.
Yeah. And then it goes back to Reggie as well, because there's a, there's a beginning and then there's a where we are now. And
how about an over 50 3-point shooting contest?
Over 50?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be surprised. You know, over 50 guys can still shoot. You know, Reggie can still shoot. You see Reggie, he's a cyclist. He keeps himself.
Well, you're not 50 yet, so.
Not yet.
How old are you?
46.
Okay, so an over 45 3-point shooting contest. Are you the one seed?
I like my odds.
Okay.
Against anybody over 45 for sure.
Reggie's still pretty good.
Yeah, everybody's good. Like the one thing that you have to remember, and I tell this to everybody that you know is a fan of mine or loves the way I shot the ball, is that for a majority of my career, I wasn't the best player. I won't say majority, but for a lot of teams I played on, I wasn't the best shooter on my teams. You know, I had Eddie House, great shooter, and you know, was like the microwave.
I think you're being humble.
I'm telling you, these guys, it's like when you see that every day and you're pushing and they're shooting the ball, like Mike Miller, James Jones, Michael Redd, like those types of guys, they shoot the ball so well. And when you see them shooting in a practice, they're going at your head every single drill. And it pushes you, and you just stay challenged, you stay competing. And without guys like that on my team, you know, it's hard for me to think how good I actually could have been without that example.
Maybe I get Bird 65. You know, he might be able to give you one rack. He'd be able to give you one rack of balls, talk some smack.
But remember, Bird didn't rely on athleticism to shoot. So it's all in his hands and his wrists. So I do believe he can still shoot it.
And you pointed out, you know, that people forget this, that Steph with the legs, Trae Young with the legs, like your shot starts with your legs. And I think people forget about that when you're trying to create your jump shot there. And you know, that's, I think, an underrated part of great deep shooters.
Yeah. And every if you go back to every All-Star weekend, when you look at the 3-point shootout, you listen to the commentary of the broadcast, and they talk about the guys who have a greater chance of winning because they are more push shot shooters. So you see they get the ball and they just push it from here, and they get to the rack and they just push, and they don't rely heavily on their lower body. And however you do it, you know, it requires practice and understanding what your release point is every time you shoot it. And you got to get it off quick, obviously, playing around great athletes. So you take Steph. He doesn't have a lot of movement in his lower body. Same thing with Trae Young. And so they get the ball off quick because it's to get the ball, just you just push it up there, and they perfected that. So it's not – when people look at me, when they look at Reggie, when they look at Dale Curry, Dale shot the ball up here. So when you look at all these different shooters, everybody has a different form. Mine was severely – reliant on, you know, my legs, my lower body. So, you know, you catch me on a shoot around in Chicago in January and February, I was having a tough go at it to start the day. Cause that United Center at the time was like, it felt like it was 30 degrees. Inside. I'm like, I can't jump. Everything I'm shooting is front rim. I'm like, for me, I had to really get warmed up. I had to understand my body.
Yeah, but Ray, it didn't bother Michael Jordan jumping in the United Center.
Nope. And that's why he was great at 7:30 at night.
Yes, he was. Every night at 7:30, he was great. Hey, great to talk to you again. And hopefully you get some recognition, more recognition out of this. And thanks for joining us, Ray.
All right, Dan. Thanks for seeing me.
That's Ray Allen, Hall of Famer, 2-time NBA champ. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, 3-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports, like a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. All in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Did you ever play the over-under game with your friends? You know, think I can eat that slice of pizza in under 30 seconds? Or I don't know. Take over a minute to down a 2-liter. Well, if you have, then you're going to love Pick 6. It's the new fantasy game from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Here's how you play it during the playoffs. Pick between 2 and 6 players and choose if they will have more or less of a stat, rebounds, points, assists, and more. Also, you track your picks, play against others for a shot to win at some big cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Use the promo code DPSHOW for a chance to win huge cash prizes. That's code DPSHOW only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date list of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Zach Levi plays NFL Hall of Famer Kurt Warner in the new biopic, American Underdog, which opens in theaters everywhere on Christmas. And the great actor Zachary Levi joins us on the program. You know that we might be related?
What?
Yeah, we might be.
How? Talk to me.
Your last name is Pew.
Yes.
My last name's Pew.
You're kidding me.
No.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wait, where did your parents or grandparents, where do they, you know, hearken from?
Ohio.
Ohio. Okay. Well, I mean, my dad was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. His dad was Minnesota based, but that's, you know, that northern Midwest. I mean, you know, you go back a generation beyond that or two, and that we could actually be from the same line.
And both handsome actors, so.
I mean, that's really the evidence, right? I mean, forget the last name. It's look at the resemblance. Look at the sexiness that we exude.
But when I was growing up, you know, everybody made fun of that last name. And you had to be really good, because if you didn't, it's pew, you stink. And I remember I got to CNN, my first job, and my boss goes, you got to change your name. And I thought he meant my first name, because I had already, you know, I was in my late 20s. I had already, you know, suffered the slings and arrows of having the last name of Pew. And then all of a sudden he goes, no, your last name. And he said, take your middle name, which I'm assuming that's what you did.
That's exactly what I did. Dude, we've walked very similar paths. Yeah. I mean, yeah, look, growing up with the last name Pew, teased relentlessly, particularly when you get to like middle school where everyone is just so horrible anyway. And then, yeah, you know, it was interesting when I, because I always wanted to be the actor that I am now ever since I was a little kid. And, but I'd always told myself, I'm not going to change for Hollywood. I'm not going to bend for Hollywood. I, you know, genuinely. And I got down into Hollywood, and then my agent told me, she was like, listen, you know, every time I make a phone call on your behalf, it's not, there's always a comment. It's not always necessarily derogatory, but there's always a comment. And I just want you to know that. And so then I thought and prayed on it real hard. And then ultimately came to the same conclusion, which was if I just augmented my full name, I can still be me. I'm not changing who I am, but I'm rebranding, if you will, you know, within the confines of my actual name. So,
well, I have two guys in the back who are Jewish, and I had to break the news to them that I didn't think you were Jewish. And they go, wait, his name is Zach Levi. Can you confirm or deny that you're Jewish?
I am not a Jew, but I am an honorary member of the tribe, let me tell you.
Okay.
I've read the child's role at Seder half a dozen times. Almost all of my representation are Jewish. It is definitely something that a lot of people confuse. I have broken the hearts of so many Jewish mothers who were so happy to see me in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and were sliding into my DMs, literally like these Jewish moms, like, have I got the girl for you? And then they would then message me later after finding out the news, after having, you know, searched it, Googled it online. They're like, oh, my heart is broken, but you're still invited over for dinner. I'm like, okay.
All right, so you get the script for the Kurt Warner story. What did you know about him prior to?
I mean, you know, I knew a good bit, or rather I knew what, let's say, most of us who were watching that story go down in real time knew. And there was a good bit in there. I mean, the bullet points were pretty profound. I mean, that's why all of us were so impressed by what we were witnessing. I mean, there was this incredible Cinderella story, obviously, of this guy who essentially comes out of nowhere, and that they rally around and play good football. They literally did just that. And then, you know, that, you know, against this story that was coming out of, he was, you know, stocking shelves in a grocery store not too long before that. And also, you know, being a person of faith and seeing his faith kind of manifest in that moment. And that was very cool and connective. So I knew a lot of those bits, but like most of us, I didn't know the real underlying foundation and journey and ups and downs and struggles that he and Brenda and the kids all kind of went through in order to get to that place. And really ultimately, you know, I think that that's what makes it all, gives it all meaning. It gives it all purpose. It's what gave Kurt purpose more than just this football, this dream he was chasing after. He found something that was even more worthy of his love, even more worthy of his, you know, attention and focus. And lo and behold, he then goes and values this and beautiful thing, this beautiful woman and her children and the relationship. And then all of this dream that he had his whole life starts to reveal itself. And then in such an incredible way. And I think all of those things are very much intertwined. It's why it all makes it, you know, not just special, but also infinitely relatable. I think all of us have had these moments in our lives, no matter where we've been, where we have our supermarket moment. I mean, I worked at a car wash for a year and a half, just trying to be sitting in this seat right now talking to you. You know, it's this character building stuff. Also, I think everybody's had their version of scraping change out of their car doors to put gas in their tank. You know, those are the types of things that I didn't know that about Kurt or Brenda or any of that, but it's what resonated with me the most for sure.
Yeah, but you worked at a shirtless car wash. I think people should understand that. Like, I mean, Come on.
You got to give the people what they want, Dan.
But do you get Shazam? How often do you get, hey, Shazam?
Oh, I mean, a good bit. I get, hey, Chuck. I did this TV show, Chuck, a long time ago. Some people recognize me from that. A lot of people recognize me from Shazam. I'm sure now moving forward, there may be some people that yell out, yo, what's up, fake Kurt? Or whatever. I don't know.
Have you gone as Shazam to a Halloween party?
Say what?
Have you gone as Shazam to a Halloween party?
No. Listen, you know, maybe if it was a prank that we had set up, but that's like, you know, you know, like how you don't wear the band shirt to the concert? Yeah. That's like the band wearing the band shirt to the band's own concert. Like, you can't. You just can't do that.
There's the bagging the groceries thing that I think everybody thinks of when they think of Kurt Warner with the, you know, the journey there. I love the story. He told this about 10 years ago to us, that he got bit by a spider on his honeymoon.
Oh, yeah.
And it affected his tryout with the Bears.
Yeah. Yeah, he told me that story. I was like, this is crazy. I mean, again, all the different ways that his journey, his life could have gone. You know, what if he actually was able to step up in that moment when he had the look with the Packers? You know, maybe they kept him on as a third stringer. I mean, what if he was behind Favre for all those years and never would have got any play? And all of a sudden, because he didn't end up with the Packers, he ends up and then almost gets a shot with the Bears and doesn't, and then is with the Rams. And then he's sitting there and he's waiting, you know, he's biding his time and he's waiting for his moment. And then that was insane.
Zach, if he went to the Bears, there would have been no Kurt Warner movie. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been. There'd be no Super Bowls. There'd be no Hall of Fame. It's about the Bears, not Kurt. That it would have probably ended quickly. And
yeah.
And you would.
Yeah, those were some thin years for Chicago. We're still in some thin years for Chicago, unfortunately.
Okay. But more important to look like Kurt Warner, act like Kurt Warner, or to throw like Kurt Warner?
The simple answer is yes. All of the above. I don't know. I mean, look, obviously, I think, you know, part of your initial ability to be believable to an audience is, do you even look anywhere close to who this person is? I feel like we did that pretty good. Okay. I feel like Kurt and I, particularly the more we've even got to know each other, the more we realize that while we are obviously still very different people, we have a lot of similar DNA. We share a lot of similar things in how we see the world and interact with the world and how we want to treat people and the things we care about. And so that really was helpful in kind of finding his essence and absorbing kind of more of who he was. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a great quarterback coach in my friend Clint Dolezel, who also played some, you know, obviously college, played arena against Kurt, and then actually got drafted by the Bears and was there for a hot second. Did not have the storied career that Kurt had, but I had about 2 months of this quarterback, you know, crash course. And really did everything I could to not just, you know, obviously, you know, try to throw as good a ball as I could throw. And I feel like I got down. I could throw some dimes here and there.
Oh,
for sure.
Okay.
But really getting into the headspace of what it means to be a quarterback and really understand, you know, how to lead your team in the huddle, under center, read your receivers and their coverage, you know, try not to telegraph to the coverage which receiver you're trying to throw to. All of that stuff is very pertinent if you're trying to bring a sports movie as realistically as you can to an audience. And I feel like with all of that done, and look, I mean, I also had incredible doubles who played a lot of football growing up and could throw dimes far more consistently than me, and took some hits, but I took the hits that I could take where I wouldn't break. Not be able to continue doing, you know, shooting the film. And I had a double that, like, literally his whole job was like, all right, bud, you're going in, and linebacker, boom, just taking him out. So it takes a village, you know, to bring it all to life, but all the pieces are there.
Your favorite sports movie is what?
Oh, man. You know, I think Field of Dreams is probably my favorite sports movie. It's not my favorite real life sports movie, but it's, I think, all in all, there's something about it that's just so profound. And I love, like, it's one of Costner's best roles. And, you know, I don't know. It's just wonderful.
Hey, congrats. Great to talk to you. We appreciate you joining us. And let's do it again.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to meet you, man.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.